Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Today, we're diving into a crucial conversation on the evolution and modernization of the CJIS security policy. Leading this discussion is Larry Zorio, chair of the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group, alongside our esteemed guest, Gerard Gallant, chair of the Institute's CJIS Security Policy Working Group. Together, they'll break down key priorities agencies should focus on to strengthen their understanding and compliance with this constantly evolving policy. Stay tuned for valuable insights that will help enhance the security of criminal justice information for agencies across the nation. Now let's turn it over to Larry and Gerard for this important discussion.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS Institute's Sound of Safety podcast. On our show today, we plan to discuss FBI CJIS and why many of you are struggling to stay compliant with its many requirements. We have on the show today, Gerard Gallant, CJIS program leader for AWS or Amazon Web Services and chair of the IGIS CJIS Security Policy Modernization Working Group and also a member of IACP's CJIS committee. So we definitely have a CJIS expert on the show today. Gerard, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. Glad to be here and glad to share some CJIS information, some CJIS experience with listeners.
All right, great. Why don't you take 30 seconds? You've been in the industry for a long time, and you know, you're the perfect guest to have on with this topic. Just take like 30 seconds just to give everybody a little bit more background on who you are and what your focus is.
Sure. Yeah, I have been, unfortunately or fortunately, in the industry for a very long time. I started in the CJIS world way back, probably almost 20 years ago at this point in time. My role today is I help customers who are Amazon Web Services customers. I help them understand how to consume services in AWS and be compliant to the FBI CJIS security policy. Really, this is all about mentoring and helping software vendors and agencies understand the complexities of CJIS compliance and what does it mean to be compliant? How do you implement this? How do you keep data secure? And it's been a very fulfilling journey over the last 20 plus years of doing this type of work and protecting this very sensitive data.
I'm sure it has been fulfilling. And, you know, I just want to personally thank you. You've helped me more than a few times with CJIS topics and other compliance topics as well. All right. So for the audience, let's say someone's completely new to public safety. And I do want to start at the beginning, like just explain to people, like, what is CJIS?
That's a big topic.
But it's a loaded one.
It's a loaded topic. Yeah, it is. If you think of CJIS, think of a number of facets. Facet number one is actually the largest division of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, of the FBI. CJIS stands for the Criminal Justice Information Services Division. It is a division of the FBI located in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And it is the largest division of the FBI. And it was in the Rolling Hills, West Virginia, beautiful, beautiful area. That division is what stores and provides to law enforcement and non-law enforcement entities around the United States and sometimes the world data to help them achieve their mission. So as an example, criminal justice information could be biometric data, could be fingerprints, could be criminal history data, could be property case incident. That type of data is called criminal justice information. Hence the term CJIS, criminal justice information. And most of that data, by the way, that originates mostly with state, local, tribal, and federal entities, you know, the front line of law enforcement in the United States. And they share it with the FBI CJIS division so that it can then be shared back to these agencies to help accomplish their mission, keep officers safer on the street, solve crimes faster. So it's a central repository of many types of information. And you go, well, what's the CJIS security policy? Well, it is the policy that governs and helps keep that data secure. It's based on a federal publication, the NIST 800-53, which is security control for federal information. So basically, this CJIS thing is people, a division, systems, but it's also a policy to help protect that very sensitive information.
Okay. Love that. That's a really good explanation for everybody. You know, when I think of CJIS, I come from the healthcare space a while back. And when I think of CJIS, it's almost like how we talk about like HIPAA with healthcare in a way, right? It's like, oh, all this HIPAA data. In public safety and in law enforcement, it's CJIS with what Gerard was just saying around how sensitive all this data is. And, you know, we want to enable all these police officers and fire and EMT and everyone Gerard mentioned, enable them with more data, but you have to do it in a safe, secure way. So it is something that people are struggling with a bit to comply with, but absolutely understand the importance of it. Absolutely. It's very, very critical.
If you look at kind of where we came from back in the last 16 to 20 years, as an example, back in 2008, the version of the policy was 4.5. It was 38 pages. Fast forward to the first modernization of the policy, release 5, you're up to 61 pages. Release 5.95, which was released in July of 2024, was 245 pages. And people go, that's a lot, a huge amount of change, a huge amount of requirements. But what we have to understand, over the past 16 years, the risk to data and risk of cybercrime and the risk of infiltration of data from bad actors, both domestic and foreign, has increased dramatically. And our protection of this sensitive data, remember, there's millions and millions of records that exist in these various systems. Our protection of that maybe didn't keep up as quickly as it should have. So we needed to ramp up the control sets and of what every agency and every software vendor who works in this space must implement to try to combat the rapid increase in cybercrime and the rapid increase in attacks on this very sensitive data. You have to strengthen it. And that's really what we're seeing over the last 3 to 4 years is a rapid intensification of the amount of requirements to help protect this data in a much deeper fashion.
I love that you called that out. That really is kind of hitting home for me because I've heard people complain about how big the document is now, right? How many policies there are. I mean, how many pages there are, and just it's 300 pages. I can't believe it. But that's because of cyber risks, right?
100%. As the cyber risks increase, we have to be able to be both proactive and reactive. Sure. And right now, we've been a little bit reactive. We have to become more proactive, which is what you're seeing in these policy changes. And there's basis for the policy changes. They're based on NIST 800-53, which is a federal publication. It's been around for a long time. It's a very robust framework. So we are playing some catch up, but it's necessary catch up to really help protect this data. If you look at our personal lives, Larry, we all have banking apps. We have all of these other applications we use with personal information. And most banking apps or investment apps, what do they do? They ask you to perhaps protect your data with multi-factor authentication and a text message for a second code. Turning this stuff on is one way of being proactive to protect your information. And we're now moving the CJIS world into those more modern controls, which is why it's called a modernization, more modern ways of thinking of how you protect information and keep the bad actors away from that very sensitive data.
Yes. Okay. All right, good. Well, let's start getting into the details a bit on the requirements with this latest change. What are just some of the themes of this latest change that we're seeing? I mean, definitely focus on cyber. But yeah, like when people are reading this, what are the ones that stand out to you?
I would say the biggest, most important process change that came about in 5.9.5, which was released in July of 2024, the biggest process change is now there's a prioritization of these controls. Prior to that, every control had the same weighting. Now, with 5.9.5, there's a prioritization, and there's actually five types of priorities. They were controls that were either existing prior to the modernization of the policy, meaning the alignment of the policy into NIST 800.5.3. There's a bunch of those. Then there are controls that are mandatory. They're P1, priority one controls. They were to be implemented by October 1st. And then we have a series of priority two, three, and four controls, which are assigned in zero cycle, which means zero cycle audit, which means over the next 3 years, you have to get these implemented such that by 27, they are completely implemented. And zero cycle audit means if you are subject to a state audit or an FBI audit, there'll be some assistance, some help in trying to help you figure out a plan to get these implemented over that time period. Nice. There's about 1,400 controls right now. More are coming when we release 6.0 of the policy comes out. About 700 are existing or P1, and about 700 are P2 to P4. So big theme was helping agencies deal with the volume to bring down the number and focus clearly. And by the way, this was a CJIS Advisory Policy Board directive approved by the director of the FBI to prioritize the implementation of these to lessen the burden a little bit. The other theme that came out in 5.9.5 is basically through the policy board meetings and through this process that all states participate in, the process will come to a close with release 6, with the final four families coming out in roughly June of 2025. So we'll have a completely modernized policy, and then there'll be some housekeeping items that come after that. So this will allow the healing to begin with all these massive changes so that people can get on to implement these things.
Yeah. If you were to choose the top three requirements that you're seeing agencies either struggle with or you feel like it's going to be a real uplift for them to kind of grasp the control and roll it out, like what would be the three that come to mind for you?
I would say number one is the identification and authentication family, the IA controls, particularly the mandatory requirement, which, by the way, these have been out now for 2 years, where they are required now, most of these by October 1st of 2024. The biggest one being the multi-factor authentication, everyone, everywhere, meaning privileged and unprivileged users, every user, every location. We used to think if you were inside a law enforcement facility or a physically secure location, a lockdown facility, we were safe from cyber attacks. We now know that is not the case in any way, shape, or form. And data is not safe anywhere, any location. One measure and the best measure to help protect this data. Remember, 47% of all data breaches worldwide last year were as a result of people, credentials being compromised, business email compromised. 47% of all those breaches were related to people. If you can take one step towards protecting against people creating and people losing tokens or losing their authentication, multi-factor is that, because a cyber criminal is very difficult to hack someone's data if an appropriate level of multi-factor authentication, because you need to know two factors to get in, not just a simple password as an example. So I would say that's number one. The second one that's been challenging because it requires speed and it requires a lot more in-depth analysis is vulnerability scanning and monitoring. Critical defects and critical issues found in any system that has CJIS data now must be fixed within 15 days, and high risks must be fixed within 30 days. When you think of the cycle, this is not like downloading an update online. Some of these are CAD systems or record systems or fingerprint systems. There's complexity involved getting critical and high fixed quickly. And likewise, flaw remediation and system integrity, getting those fixed quickly under that time frame is challenging. And it's going to have to put a new mindset into agencies to help them really understand the importance that they really need to be doing this every day and thinking about the health of these systems every day, hopefully through automated tools. Because if you're not thinking about them, your defects and latent challenges, vulnerabilities are going to be there, and you're not going to be able to meet the policy requirements. But probably most importantly, it creates a vulnerability that can be compromised and can be taken advantage of.
Okay. Yeah, I think if I'm an agency and I just heard what you said around how I need to put these in place and I need to do them every day, that to me is a bit nerve-wracking. It really is.
It's very nerve-wracking because you may be used to a system. And let's face it, the vast majority of these systems are purchased from vendors. Yep. They're purchased from vendors. Some are homegrown and some are modern, brand new systems that are created, but they're purchased from vendors. So my recommendation would be work with your vendors, work with your software vendors, work with your cloud providers. Try to get a process in place if you don't already have one. Go to your IT teams. And let's face it, the vast majority of agencies in the United States are smaller. Come up at least with a plan. How will you do this? Mm-hmm. Go back to your vendors where you buy these solutions from. What do they have to offer? What would they recommend? Because doing nothing is a recipe for data being compromised. And there are solutions out there, and your vendors, they're professional in this space. They can help you understand what they offer and how they can help you meeting these requirements.
Yeah, I love that suggestion. Let's just use the vulnerability management example that you brought up. If you have servers that are in your basement or in a closet down the hall or in the basement, you need to be scanning those. And Gerard just said every day. You need to be scanning those every day looking for vulnerabilities, because vulnerabilities come out every second of every day. And you touched on like leaning on your vendors, especially some of these modern vendors, like even the ones that are in the cloud. And I'm going to pose this question to you, but I'm pretty sure I know the answer. Is it safe to say that especially some of these modern cloud vendors, you can actually push some of these controls to them? Like, for instance, the vulnerability one, like, if you're not managing your server and it's in the cloud and the vendor is managing that server for you,
100%,
then you should be pushing that vendor to be doing vulnerability scans regularly. Is that a true statement? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're talking a SaaS vendor, a software as a service vendor, right, where let's say you have a solution that's cloud-based, an RMS solution, that should be something that software provider does regularly. Every day, they have defenses in place. Ask questions about that. Let's say you build your own solution in the cloud. Let's say an agency builds their own. They use a cloud provider to build their own. Then you, as that agency, then you're responsible for it. But most cloud solutions these days that you build have the ability to turn on other services to check your instances for vulnerabilities, to put front door controls and back door controls in place that you can easily turn on. You know, much like your servers in the basement, if it's an on-premise environment, right? There's software you can install to do this automatically and port back to you. So the same applies, but you know, push your SaaS vendors and even push your other vendors. If you're in the cloud, make certain they do this every day and ask for reports. Ask, did you find anything? Are you fixing it?
Yep.
You know, report back. So 100%. The agencies don't have to do this all on their own.
Sure. All right. But let me flip the question on you now. What would be the two or three, let's call them must-do controls? And maybe even some of the ones you mentioned are going to be must-dos. So those might be difficult, but they are must-dos. But what are your top three must do? Like, after someone listens to this podcast tomorrow, they should start trying to roll out.
I would say, although one of the most challenging ones and the one that's caught the most amount of flack, frankly, from agencies, the one that's front of mind is multi-factor authentication.
Yes.
If you do one thing,
yes,
figure out your multi-factor authentication strategy. Mm-hmm. It sounds difficult. It's not overly difficult, but figure it out. It's a lot easier these days than it used to be back 10, 12 years ago when you had RSA fobs and all these hardware things you have to do. There's all sorts of software-based tools that are relatively inexpensive. Figure out your multi-factor authentication, meaning user ID, password, and some third factor like a software application on a telephone, one installed on a PC. Figure that out, because that is something that, remember, 47% of all data breaches were traced back to people. If you can protect the access that your people have by adding a second factor to that access, it's one less thing a cyber attacker needs to get. And generally speaking, those are independent, much harder to attack. I would say the second most critical thing, a little more challenging an on-premise system, but the second most critical thing is understand where are you encrypting. We used to think, hey, it's on-premise, I'm good, I don't need to protect anything. We now know, hopefully everyone agrees, we now know that is not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Ask your vendors, figure out how you encrypt your data on disk, whether it's in the basement, in your data center, in the cloud, encrypt that data. Because if data is compromised, people's identities are compromised, which is, remember, that's the vast majority of cyber attacks happen.
Yep.
You need to be able to unencrypt that data. An encrypted blob of data is useless because, let's say, a ransomware attack. They get all your data. Hey, that's great, but it's encrypted.
It's all encrypted.
It's absolutely useless.
Yeah, you're not going to do
and
anything.
And I would say the third thing that goes with that is make certain you understand, yes, you can encrypt data. How are you managing the master keys to manage that encryption? You have to be able to have a story there. This sounds complicated, but even desktop computers have ability to encrypt data and control those keys. Ask your vendors, how are you encrypting data on disk? How are you encrypting data in transit? And how are you managing keys? I would say those are the three, it's really two, but multi-factor authentication, dig into it, figure it out. It's critical. Encrypt your data on disk always, and then manage your encryption keys. Much easier in the cloud if you do that, but even on-premise, these are possible things that you really should be doing.
Yeah, I love all three of those. I'm going to add one more, which is you need to be reviewing logs of what your administrator accounts are doing. Because Gerard threw out that 47% number with cyber attacks. Of that, those attackers are trying to get access to administrative accounts. So this to me feels like, yes, it's going to take a little bit of time, but the value of you reviewing those activity logs and understanding, all right, these are the 20 admin accounts I have, and these are the changes that they're making and what the activity that they're doing, that is going to be priceless. If you have a well-oiled system, those administrative accounts should not be making a lot of changes. So once you dial it in, it shouldn't be a noisy activity log. But yeah, at first, it might be a little noisy because you didn't realize that this account is doing X, Y, and Z. But the whole purpose of that is an attacker tries to gain access to that and then does a lot of damage. So reviewing those logs, like, you should be able to start that tomorrow. If you don't know where those logs are, reach out to your vendor. Say, hey, how do I get access to these logs? And say to yourself, once a week, or, you know, every day is probably too aggressive for everybody listening, but once a week, review those logs, at least start there and just keep tabs on it. There are systems that actually will alert you when some of these activities are happening. So you can, you know, push your vendors to maybe see if they have that, but that would be kind of the fourth one I would add to that, Gerard.
That is an excellent, excellent point. Most systems create a tremendous amount of data, which gets dumped to disk to monitor the system. Even systems from 20 years ago, a lot of things were logged, they were audited, and they were never looked at. And that is very valuable data to have. And it's an excellent point, Larry. It is a policy requirement too. Policy requirement, yep. I would say, you know, ask the questions. How can I even just look at the exceptions that come up? My privileged accounts, as you said, they should be fine-tuned. How do I look at those? Excellent account, excellent addition to the three that I suggested.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you mentioned that there is another update coming. So for folks that aren't aware, right, there are updates kind of every year to this. And you know, as a practitioner myself, like I'm a CISO, I need to follow CGIS, and I also need to follow a lot of other standards and requirements. How do people just stay compliant and stay up to date and continually kind of progress towards this? Do you have any suggestions for people who are maybe like just annoyed that there's an update every year? And, oh, geez, I got to do more and I got to do more of this. And any suggestions you have for them on tracking it all and managing it all?
I would say the pace of change we've had over the last 3 years has been rapid. In all the years I've been doing this, it's the largest changes we've ever had in the policy. But if you harken back to what I said earlier, we had some catch up to do.
Yep.
Because the pace of cybercrime was increasing dramatically and we had to catch up. The regular cadence that we used to see, a yearly minor updates, will start again in 2025. The change, when 6.0 gets published, that'll add 4 control families, and then things will slow down significantly and we will get into getting this implemented, getting this up to date. What I would say is keep informed. The FBI CGIS Security Policy website is a great place to monitor for updates. That site has a companion document in Excel and also has that same companion document, much easier to read. Reach out to your information security officer at your state because they're plugged in. They're plugged into this whole process.
That's a good point.
Ask your vendors and just continue just to try to keep informed about where things are at with the CGIS policy. That Security Policy Resource Center on the FBI site, also available on the internal sites for law enforcement vendors on the portal. That is a great place to see these updates because they're officially published there.
Perfect.
And just keep asking your vendors, asking your vendors and asking your staff, are we up to date or do we have a plan to be up to date?
All right. So for those that have listened to previous episodes of this podcast, I'm going to sound like a broken record. So I apologize ahead of time. Gerard, love those suggestions, right? You need to be pushing your vendors. You need to be looking at updates. That website's awesome. But I'm going to go a different direction. Everybody listening, you need to decide on a framework that you are going to follow at your agency. We talk a lot on this podcast around NIST, and NIST maps very nicely to CGIS. And the beautiful thing about that is if you just tell yourself, my agency, my department, my company is going to follow NIST and the NIST framework, when CGIS has an update in 6 months, or maybe they have an emergency update next week, or your state comes out with a new privacy policy, or whatever it is, if you're accepting credit cards and you got to worry about PCI compliance, if you have a framework, you can map that framework back to all these standards. So then you can kind of take a deep breath and not really drink out of the fire hose with these changes. You can feel confident that, all right, CGIS is trying to map to NIST, right? So we're good there. And if a change happens, you're not going to freak out. You're going to go to your framework and say, hey, all right, we're doing this around multi-factor, or we're already reviewing these logs. Let me see. Oh, wait a minute. This actually maps directly to CGIS. We're already doing that. That's great. We're already reviewing those logs. So just keep that in mind. That's another way of just always keeping up with all the different changes and requirements and regulations that are happening around you.
100% agree. I would say it maps very closely. The new CGIS policy modernization is based on NIST 800-5-3 release 5, and it is moderate baseline controls.
Perfect.
There's low, moderate, and high. So you can disregard the high baseline controls. It is based on that policy. That policy is readily available. And there's companion guides, et cetera, for it. But it is based on the modern baseline controls. Choose something. That is a great place to start. It's well understood in the industry. It's well understood by your software vendors. And although it is a large amount of controls, it is a framework. It is a methodology by which you can help manage your security controls of your agency.
Perfect. Very well said. We're going to be wrapping it up in a second, but I do want to talk about your IGIS working group that you chair, CGIS Security Policy Modernization Working Group. What are you guys doing in that working group. Yeah.
Realizing the degree and the extent of changes that are happening, all volunteers, we are producing companion guides. So each of the sections will have, each of the policy areas, the control families will have a companion guide. There's already been a few published to the IGIS website, and we will add another 4 or 5 more in the coming weeks. And then we'll go down to P2 controls. These companion guides are kind of a little primer on the changes that are made, the changes in the policy from what it used to be. So when media protection came in, what are the new requirements that came in? It doesn't go into a huge amount of detail about the requirements, but it helps you at least see, oh, okay, here are the changes in this policy section. That's one thing we're doing. We also published with IGIS guidance. Each of the policy areas or control families now have a requirement to create a policy. Control number one in each one is you must create a policy. Well, NIST published model policies. Those are available both from your state information security officer for CGIS. They're also on the IGIS Institute's website. They are hosting these model policies. Nice. So if you need to make a model policy for access control and you've never seen one before, there is the NIST model policy on access control that you can edit and fine tune to your agency specifics. That is fully hosted on IGIS's website, so you don't have to go hunting for them. They're a little hard to find on the NIST website. IGIS has them there. In summary, companion guides to help ease some of the change burden, and these model policies, which are NIST, but we've hosted them on the IGIS website.
Listeners, please, please, please take advantage of those policy templates. When you're putting together controls, like, I'm going to say it, the most unsexy thing that you're doing is writing that policy. Everyone puts it off. No one wants to do it. And Gerard just talked about a gift that IGIS is giving you and your CGIS contact in every state. Take advantage of those. That is a cheat sheet. Just go and grab them and adopt them. Change the name at the top. Maybe fill in a few different contact information throughout it, and you're good. All of a sudden, you have what, Gerard? How many of those policies are there? Like a dozen or more?
Yeah, I think there's about 15 of them.
15.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is because the CGIS requirements are now NIST 800.5.3 requirements, that is the same requirement framework that the FedRAMP for federal entities use. So if you're looking at a requirement and you're like, I have no idea what this requirement means, plug it into your favorite search engine. I will guarantee you that someone has written about that requirement and how it's implemented and what it means. Because these requirements have been around for a very long time. They form the basis for the federal government's FedRAMP program since the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. I will guarantee you, plug it into your favorite search engine, you will find good information of what does that requirement mean and maybe some tips on how you implement it. So gone are the days of, oh, this is a CGIS requirement. It doesn't exist anywhere else, but in the CGIS policy, there's a tiny amount of those left. Vast majority are NIST requirements. Plug them into your favorite search engine if you're trying to figure one out, and you know, and ask your vendors and ask your cloud providers also.
Love that. Love it. All right. Do you have an ask for the audience around your working group? Could you use more members? Could you use more help?
Absolutely. If you've got a passion for CGIS security and protecting the sensitive data, mm-hmm. we could absolutely, we're all volunteers. Doesn't take a lot of time. Always looking for volunteers. If you have a passion for this and can spare some time, not a huge time commitment, we'd appreciate it.
All right. Everybody reach out to IGIS and get involved, please. All right, Gerard, thank you for the time today. This was great. This is a really good primer for CGIS. I actually think this is going to set us up for some additional episodes. This is always a hot topic. CGIS, any conference that I go to in this industry, the CGIS topics are always hot. Everybody's always in there, always asking. So there is definitely a demand out there for this information. Thank you for this. We're going to be doing more, listeners. So please stay tuned for more episodes around CGIS.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.